Welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Thank you for joining us on the Cleveland Cavaliers Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts, Tim Alcorn and Jim Jones.
From the Cavaliers Radio Studio Central at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in downtown Cleveland. Hi again, everybody. Welcome to Cavs HQ. I'm Tim Alcorn, joined by Jim Jones. Boy, a big show ahead. We've got some very special guests lined up, and then, of course, a big week ahead for the Cavaliers as the NBA draft will take place on Wednesday night. Jim, great to be back with you, and as I mentioned, two great guests tonight. Cavs legend, per se, NBA legend, Lenny Wilkins, along with one of the all-time greats in NBA broadcasting, Tim Roy, the radio play-by-play voice of the Golden State Warriors. This should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Tim. An opportunity to talk to two legends, two all-time greats at what they do.
Sounds good to me. So Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Stay with us. We're coming right back as Lenny Wilkins will settle into the legend's chair. And we welcome you back. It's Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Alcorn, along with Jim Jones. And, boy, our guest this week, settling into the legend's chair, as we call it, is certainly one of the all-time legends, not just here with the Cavaliers, but in the NBA. I think if I went through all of his accolades, it would take up the entire interview. But let's just say real quickly, three times in the NBA Hall of Fame as a player, 15-year career, nine-time All-Star. As a coach, over 1,300 wins, 332 to be exact. That's number three on the all-time list. And, of course, seven of those years with the Cavaliers. He also won a world championship in Seattle and in the NBA a third time, as a member and assistant coach of the 92 Dream Team, that gold medal team. Yes, we're speaking of Lenny Wilkins. Lenny, we are honored and thrilled to have you in that legend's chair. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation with yours truly and Jim Jones.
Well, thank you for having me here. It's a real pleasure.
Well, it's great to have you. So I don't even know where to start, but when you look back, both as a player and a coach, do you more often look at one side than the other?
Well, you know, I was very fortunate in both areas. Certainly I enjoyed being a player during those years. And then to be able to coach and have success with it, certainly that had to make me feel pretty good too.
I read through your resume, your accolades, but boy, is there anything that you go, if I could have just done one more thing, is there anything that you go, man, if I could have just gotten over that hurdle?
Well, I do tease Don Nelson. You see, Don Nelson, his career was over, but the Golden State, they kept him there so that he could break my record. And so I teased him.
Really? Yeah.
We were a couple of years ago back at the Hall of Fame, and we were being interviewed. And I told Don that I was going to come back for three games.
The ultra competitor you still are, right, Coach?
Definitely.
Jimmy?
Coach, first of all, I want to thank you. You know, I do, during my course of my commentary on radio, I use a lot of stuff. But Tommy Heinsohn was one of the people that I talked to religiously every time we went to Boston, because of the knowledge he had in his head. And the time that you and I spent in Cleveland at dinner with our wives and just sitting around talking, you don't know how that gave me a really different perspective on basketball and life, period. And I always wondered, I know you do work still for the league, you know, talking and public speaking and stuff, but I've got a couple of questions that run together. What would you tell young coaches today or aspiring young coaches?
Well, you know, I would tell young coaches, first of all, you want to be consistent, okay? You don't want to say one thing and do something different. So the consistency helps. And the other thing is, I would tell them that, help the players to understand the game. If you do, then it's easier for them.
You were also a player coach. Now, those days are long gone by. But how did that experience help you when you then put the suit and tie on and became the head coach just sitting in the chair? How did that player coach experience benefit you?
Well, it was a great experience. And when I became a player coach, I remember there was a coach at the University of Washington named Marv Harshman. And I asked, Marv and I became good friends. And I asked him to come watch one of my practices and tell me what I need to know. And so when practice was over, he said that when you're out there, you got to be the player. And when you're off the court, then be the coach. You know, but you have to separate them. And it made sense, you know, because I felt like, if I know what to do, then do it.
You know, Coach, great stuff. You know, when you talk about what players have led to have been trailblazers in our league, I look at Bill Russell, won a championship as a coach, Black, of course. Al Addles won at Golden State with a bunch of young kids. And then Lenny Wilkins, when your years in Seattle. Can you just give us some idea, what was it like as far as the pressures and dealing with players of different backgrounds? I mean, what does it take today to do that, Coach?
Well, I'll tell you this, Jim. I don't think you could ever be a player coach again. Because you have to also make sure that you're ready to play. And today, these kids come out of college early. They maybe have 1 year of college. Some don't have any. And the thing is that they don't have that experience. So you have to help them understand and learn the game. And so I don't think a player coach that you could do justice to your game and also preparing your team. So a player coach era is over. You know, yeah, we did it for a little bit. But I don't think that I could do it today.
Yeah. Well, Coach, look, I want to throw another one in there because I think people need to understand where you came from. You know, you came from Brooklyn. You know, you grew up in the Bedford-Stuy area. What was that like?
Well, listen, that's where I lived. That's where I grew up. It was a tough neighborhood.
Yeah.
But we were street kids.
Yes.
And I was a kid who, my dad died when I was five. So my mother was pretty tough on us. And, you know, being a kid that hung out on the playgrounds, I played baseball, basketball, I played stoop ball, handball, you name it. But the fact that I was an athlete, the gangsters didn't bother me. In fact, most of them were my cousin. You know, participate. But the best thing that ever happened was two things. The priest in my parish was like a big brother. My mother, if she didn't like who I was hanging out with, she would talk to him. So he would talk to me. But also, I met Jackie Robinson. And I was a huge baseball fan at that time. And so Jackie became my role model. Oh, I mean, this guy was a fierce competitor. He was a man on the field and off the field, you know, and played with intelligence.
Yes.
You know, fierceness and intelligence. And yes. I was so impressed with him and the Dodgers. And I got to know all of them, Campanella, you know, Pee Wee Reese, Gil Hodges.
Yes.
You know, Junior Gilliam, you name them. I knew them. Duke Snider, Carl Ferrillo, Don Newcomb.
Coach, let me ask a question. At that time, didn't they live in your neighborhoods?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I used to go to Ebbets Field all the time. And we could take the train there, and we got in the bleachers for 50 cents.
Awesome stories. Again, you're hearing from Lenny Wilkins, NBA Hall of Famer, former player and coach with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's sitting in the Legends chair in this edition of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. We'll have more from Lenny Wilkins right after this. Welcome back to Cavs HQ. It's presented by Sherwin-Williams, Tim Elkhorn, Jim Jones, and we're honored to have sitting in the Legends chair, Lenny Wilkins, NBA Hall of Famer. Of course, played here in Cleveland under head coach Bill Fitch as a player, and then came back to the Cavaliers as the head coach when he teamed up with Wayne Embry. And Lenny, that's where I want to start, because in our previous segment, Jim talked about the African-American coaches that came before you, Bill Russell, Al Attles, of course, John McClendon, Earl Lloyd. But you and Wayne Embry were the first duo as far as a GM coach that were both African-Americans. That was really groundbreaking at the time, to have a black GM and a black coach. How cognizant were you and Wayne of that? In other words, as Jim asked you in the first segment, did maybe some additional pressure come with that?
Well, you know, we didn't think much about it. We just knew that both of us understood the game and knew the game. Wayne was a great general manager. He knew basketball. He played basketball. And when they invited me to come down and talk because they wanted to interview me, and it was kind of interesting at the time because when I was traded to Cleveland, I didn't want to come at first, only because at that time they were considered the cadavers, they used to call them. And I was leaving a team that I thought would be in the playoffs. So I didn't want to come. But Nick Mulledy and Bill Fitch came to Seattle to talk to me. And after we talked and everything, I decided, no, I wasn't ready to retire, that I wanted to play. So I came, and I played for the Cleveland Cavaliers. But going back to Wayne, yeah, we were the first really duo. And it might have been pressure. I'm sure Wayne felt it more than I did. But when you're coaching and you're actually out there involved in everything, you don't think that much about it.
So you inherit, per se, this incredibly young team of Brad Daugherty, Ron Harper, Mark Price, Hot Rod Williams, all these rookie players.
Yeah.
What was that like? And the second part of my two-part question, Lenny, would be, does this current Cavs team with all these young players, are there similarities there?
Well, I'll tell you, there may be. And at the time, we knew we were young, but we knew we were going to be better. And I truly believe that. I remember my first year there, and we had all these rookies. I think we might have had one or two veterans. And every time we stepped on the floor, we knew it was going to be an experience for us. But we did finish 41-41 my first year. And I said, just watch us the next year. And the next year we did. We took off. The young kids like Brad Daugherty, Mark Price, you know, Ron Harper, Dwight Davis, all these guys started to blossom because they were very coachable. They want it to be better, and I told them that we're gonna defend. We're not letting anybody just step on the floor against us. We're gonna go after every team we play, and I was so pleased at how well they developed.
Jim?
Yeah, you know, one of the things, great stuff, Tim. Another thing, Coach, I've always wondered, if I'm sitting there with Lenny Wilkins or Bill Russell or Al Addles watching a basketball game, I've always wanted to ask you guys, what are you looking at and what are you watching? Like, when you watch today's game, what are you looking at, Coach, when you watch these players run up and down the floor, situations come up, or whatever?
Well, when I look at the floor, I mean, I'm looking at that whole floor, and I'm not just seeing one thing. I'm trying to see what's happening, what's developing, what's there that we could take advantage of, and then I tell my players that. A lot of times, if I take a player out of the game, he comes over to the bench, and we talk, and I tell him what I see, so that when he goes back out there, I'm hoping that he'll see some of the same things.
Lenny, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, I mentioned that you're in the NBA Hall of Fame as part of the 92 Dream Team. And somebody asked me the other day about how the guys in the NBA competed down in the bubble without fans. And I referenced the 92 Dream Team when Chuck Daly said, you guys are just going to go 5-on-5. Perhaps the greatest game ever played that nobody ever saw. But just talk about the competitive level of that game when the Dream Team just went 5-on-5 in the gym. From what I hear, it's legendary.
Yeah, our practices were better than some of the games. Because, you know, the players, we talked to them. And I remember I used to say to them all the time, if you think you're the world's best, why don't we show the world that? Okay? When we go out there, let's challenge one another. Let's make one another better. And they responded. They loved that. Magic loved it. You know, Charles Barkley loved it. Karl Malone, all the guys. They wanted to compete, and they were not going to give each other quarter. That's how much they respected one another.
Right.
So every time we stepped on the floor, it was a challenge. And sometimes we had to cut the practices short so nobody would get hurt.
But I'm sure you still vividly recall that 5-on-5 when Chuck rolled the ball out and said, you guys get after it for a game.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing, what happened was he was a little disappointed, Chuck, because we gave them some time off. And then we met in Nice. We flew to Nice, and the practice wasn't going that good. And Chuck was upset. So I called Magic over, and I said to Magic, hey, you know, Coach isn't happy. And, you know, rather than be here all day, we need to get the competitive edge up a little bit. And Magic said, I'll take care of it. And he started to razz Michael. And next thing you know, they got Michael's attention. You know, because Michael was playing golf every morning. And they got his attention. And the game became so competitive that we had to stop it because Chuck was worried someone would get hurt.
That is great stuff. That is really cool. Now, Lenny, before we let you go, as we were talking before we rolled here, Joe Tate is a dear friend of mine. My men are in the broadcast business. He told me many years ago about Lenny Wilkins and how he orders a milkshake. Now, you've got to share with our fans. Lenny, you've got to share with the fans. What's the deal with Lenny Wilkins when you order a milkshake?
Well, you know, when I was growing up in my neighborhood, there was a drugstore, and they had a fountainette there where they made milkshakes and malts and stuff like that.
Right.
And so whenever I'd get a hot dog or something or a hamburger, I'd want to get a milkshake. And they would make the milkshake. But a lot of times, if you don't say anything, they just pour the glass and what's left in the container, they throw it out. And I said, hey, wait a minute. I want all of it. And Joe Tate fell out. He couldn't believe it. But I told him, I said, you know, I was used to that. And I want all of it.
Lenny, the last time I ordered a smoothie, I did the same thing, and I thought of you when I did it. That's a true story. I'm getting what's in the container as well.
Hey, let me tell you, we had a great time. Joe was just a wonderful person and a great broadcaster. But we love going out having shakes and a malt, you know.
Yeah. Something tell me Joe didn't waste any of the shake either. All right, on that note, Lenny, it has been a real honor and a privilege to have you in the Legends chair. Obviously, you're beloved here in the city of Cleveland and throughout the NBA.
Yes.
Congratulations on your remarkable career.
Well, thank you so much,
Coach.
And it was just a pleasure.
Much.
So many wonderful memories of Cleveland, and believe me, I loved the time that I was there.
Awesome. Lenny Wilkins joining us on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. We're coming right back with more, so stay with us. The Cleveland Cavaliers have launched the Land Collective, a new private label apparel brand exclusively available at the Cavs Team Shop. Made from the land, for the land, the new brand is designed in-house by the Cavs graphic design team and includes pieces that pay homage to the team's deep roots in the city of Cleveland. The new collection debuts with the Draft D series, which features two t-shirts and three sweatshirts inspired by the exciting future of the Cavs as the team prepares to make the fifth pick at the 2020 NBA Draft on November 18th and return for the 2020-21 season. Cavs in the Community is brought to you by Discount Drug Mart. We'll be right back with the second half of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Welcome back to Cavs HQ. It's presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Elkhorn along with Jim Jones. We're anxious to get back at it on the play-by-play and color commentary aspect of Cavs basketball. In about a month or so, the NBA announcing that December 22nd is the anticipated start date for the 2021 season. And a guy that's been doing play-by-play a lot longer than me now joins us on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Roy, the longtime voice of the Golden State Warriors, stops by to pay us a visit. Tim, we are really honored to have you on the program tonight.
Oh, no, the honor is all mine to speak with you guys. You guys are great, and always look forward to come to Cleveland and catch up with you guys. And boy, it's been a long time since I've seen an NBA game up close, so I'm looking forward to that.
Boy, isn't that the truth. And, Tim, I wanted to start there. Both the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors were part of the Delete Eight, the eight teams that didn't go down to the bubble. I know from the Cavaliers aspect, that was very disappointing because they were just getting acclimated to J.B. Bickerstaff and such a young team. How do you think it affected Golden State, more of a veteran team, and, of course, Steve Kerr at the helm for quite a while?
I think, you know, I think there's pros and cons because the Warriors are in an entirely different setup right now than Cleveland,
right,
you know, in terms of where they are. I think they was disappointed because they had just acquired Andrew Wiggins, and they would have liked to have gotten more games with him to see what they can do with him and what he can bring for them. But I think on the whole, because it came on the backside of a five-year run, Klay Thompson out with a torn ACL, Curry out for most of the year, I think it was okay in that sense. I think their core guys who have been around a while got a chance to take that, and even maybe more than physical, a nice mental break. So I think there'll be that, you know, sort of renewed excitement and vigor, you know, when they do get to camp, when they do get to games again. And I think it'll be great for them. I think for the coaching staff, I think they would have liked to have more time to incorporate, you know, whatever new bodies they have. But I think for the core guys, it might be a real good thing. Because if you think about it, Stephen Clay, Steph Curry, Clay Thompson, both really just got like a year off right in the middle of their careers. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the effect it has. I think it's going to help them and maybe add another year to their career.
Great point. Jim?
You know, we're developing. You know, we've been in that phrase since we lost LeBron. It's pretty obvious. What are you guys looking for? Because I see some holes, but I want to hear from someone who's close. I know the holes we have, and it won't hold water right now because of the inexperience. But what are you guys looking at with an experienced veteran team?
Yeah, I think right now, I think the Warriors have a number of spots that they need to fill. They have means to do that. They have the number two pick. They have a trade exception from the Andre Iguodala deal. They have, you know, the minimums and other, you know, avenues they can sign guys. To me, I think right now you're looking, this is just me talking. I think a backup point guard is one thing they need to have. You know, they had that luxury of Sean Livingston or Barbosa for so many years. That's no longer the case. I think if you look at the roster, guys like Livingston, Andre Iguodala, players like that are no longer on the roster. So, you know, Wiggins is there, but I think they could use, you know, a backup, like a defender with length, you know, a guy that can do, you know, some things for him, maybe knock down an occasional three, a player like that. And then the other thing they have to do, which was painfully obvious last year, is they have to get bigger. Marquese Chris did a nice job at center, but I still think they need to get another, you know, one or two big guys. And if you think about their division, you know, with the Lakers and the Clippers and teams that have size, I think that's, you know, you have to, you know, have people that can match up with them. So I think those are the three areas, I think, where they really would like to get some shoring up and to bring in people that are going to help them win some games.
Again, we're talking with Tim Roy. He's the radio voice of the Golden State Warriors as he joins us here on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim, I think there's this expectation that last year was a blip on the screen for Golden State, that they're just going to ascend right back to the top of the Western Conference. Is that the anticipation? Is that the expectation?
I think so. I think that they feel very confident that with their group, they can get back to the top pretty quickly. Maybe not right away, but I think over the course of a season, I think they'll make that kind of ascension. You know, Steph Curry is still Steph Curry, and he, you know, he still has another window of a couple of years. And I think that's how they're looking at this. I think the moves you'll see the Warriors make, you know, between now and December 22nd are moves that they're going to, you know, try to load up for a 2 or 3 year run to see what they can do. And I think, you know what, those guys deserve it. You know, those guys took a franchise that was, you know, for a lot of years, a punchline, for many years, in my Warriors tenure, the high holy day was lottery day. That was the day you found out where you were going to be drafting. And, you know, there was usually the anticipation of maybe a playoff team, but that would evaporate by the new year. And so, you know, those guys took a franchise and made it a worldwide brand, and they helped the owners get to the point where they can build this new building in San Francisco that unfortunately had to shut down after only about 6 months. So yeah, I think those guys deserve that kind of a run, and I think that's what they intend to do.
Great take. Again, we're talking with Tim Roy. We'll take a quick timeout on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. And Tim alluded to the draft. It's coming up Wednesday night. We'll talk to the voice of the Warriors about what might unfold in about 48 hours. So stay with us. We're coming back with the voice of the Golden State Warriors right after this. Welcome back to Cavs HQ. It's presented by Sherwin-Williams, Tim Elkhorn, along with Jim Jones. And we're joined by Tim Roy. He's the radio voice of the Golden State Warriors. Tim, this will be year 26. Is that correct?
Correct, 26.
Wow. How fast has that gone?
It's, you know, when I took the job, my son had just been born, and my daughter, we haven't even, was not even, you know, we weren't even thinking about adding a second kid at that point. And now they're both grown and out of college and working, and so, yeah, it's flown by. But you know what? It's just blessed to have the chance to do this for a living. It's an incredible thing. And as I tell my kids, I said, I want you guys to try to find a job like mine where, you know, I don't care what kind of a job it is, but like every day, right. You know, it never feels like work. This is fun.
Boy, can I relate to that, no doubt. Well, I mentioned we wanted to talk about the NBA draft coming up on Wednesday night. Cavaliers sitting at the number 5 spot. Golden State at the number 2 spot. You talked about that in the previous segment. But, Tim, a lot of rumblings that the Warriors may move out of that number 2 spot. What can you share with us?
Absolutely nothing. Under pain of death, I've been sworn to secrecy. No.
And loss of job.
Yes, exactly. That job I just told you about. You're trying to kill me. I think here's what I can say. I know that if you look at a guy like Bob Myers, I mean, he has shown the ability to keep his options open. I mean, I still think the one thing he did that can never has not received enough credit or at least enough examination was his trade for Andre Iguodala years ago when he convinced the Utah Jazz to take Andres Biedrich and Richard Jefferson and a couple of first round picks and got another team involved, and I think it was Minnesota, and pulled off this three-way deal that landed them Iguodala. And so I think they're going to be very active. And let's face it, you know, the number 2 pick in this draft could be very enticing for a lot of teams. You know, the Warriors may not have the absolute need at number 2 to pick the guy that they're going to pick. They may, you know, the best player available. So that means that other teams below them might try to entice the Warriors to trade with them. So I think their phones are ringing. I think they're going to be very busy. And I think depending on what Minnesota has said they're going to do, I think will dictate just how active they could be. I wouldn't be surprised either way if they keep the pick or trade the pick. I think all options are open.
Jim?
Well, we talk a lot about the new age of NBA, and asset gathering is a fundamental part of that, and I understand why they would consider it. But I want to give you guys credit, because it takes a lot of character to think outside the box, especially, as you mentioned, when that Warrior franchise was struggling. Here you come in with a new profile of player based upon the changes in the league's rules. Less physical contact, the presence of the three-point shot, and then the mathematical conclusions that it's better to get 3 than 2 just based on percentages. And you designed a whole system offensively to score points from the three-point line based on pace and skill set. But you also played the kind of defense that could deny the three-point shot. I remember that one championship year, you were the best team on offense and the best team on defense. Talk a little bit about that.
It was kind of amazing that it came together the way they did. And, you know, I mentioned Iguodala. That helped on the defensive side. You have a guy like that who's so smart, Draymond Green. You know, and let's face it, I don't think anybody thought Draymond was going to turn out the way he did. But once they saw, you know, that he was all about winning and would, you know, would do the things they asked him to do, then they totally bought in with Draymond after that. I mean, he's, you know, and Klay Thompson, I think, is one of those guys. He could have played in any era. He's just a, you know, if he wasn't playing NBA basketball, he'd be down at the Y every night or every Saturday morning, you know, playing all day.
Yeah.
I think what they stumbled upon when they drafted Curry was they found this kid that everybody liked to play with. You know, that was the selling point when they decided to trade Monte Ellis, was that it just seemed that they were better when Curry had the ball in his hands. And then you add the shooting ability. And let's also give credit to both Clay and Steph. They were not the players they are today when they came in the league. When Klay Thompson came in the league, he couldn't finish at the rim, and now he can. It just adds to his game. Steph Curry didn't have that kind of range when he first came to the Warriors. I remember one day, Jim, I'm watching him warm up, and he's taking that shot, you know, like right past half court, and he's warming up. And I'm thinking, what's he doing? He's never going to take that in the game. You know? and sure enough, you know, a couple months later, he had enough confidence in it, and he starts pulling up from there. So they kind of took that and said, how can we make this work? Steve Kerr, former Cavalier, incorporated stuff from Greg Popovich and Lenny Wilkins and all the great coaches he played with, and got that motion type of read offense. And when you combine that with their shooting, it was devastating.
I want to ask you guys a question. Jim, even though you're my co-host, I'm going to ask you this question as long as, or as well as Tim. Jim, as you alluded to, you guys were together four straight years in the NBA Finals with the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. So, Tim, I'll start with you, and then, Jim, you can chime in. As a broadcaster, as a just a sheer, pure broadcaster, was there a moment that stood out in those finals?
Wow, as a broadcaster. you know, I think, to me, I'm going to give you two. They're both Warrior related. Obviously, I'm a Warrior broadcaster.
Right.
You know, the one was when it was about Game 6, 2015 in Cleveland, and you know, you prepare and stuff, but then with about 2 minutes to go in the game, I look up the scoreboard and said, "Oh my God, they're going to win this thing." You know, as a Warrior announcer, it never occurred to me the Warriors were ever going to win the NBA title at some point. You know what I mean? So that was one thing. And then the other part was that, you know, just watching when the Warriors won at home in 2017, I believe, that was the first time any Bay Area team had won a championship at home since, you know, the A's in the 1970s. So that's a moment. That's a moment that I'll live with, as well as, you know, watching, you know, Cleveland win. That's another moment. I mean, you know, when it's all over and done with, you get to say, hey, I was there for that, you know. And so, you know, very, very fortunate to have been able to chronicle those moments.
Very cool. Jim, what's your broadcaster's moment?
Well, I think it was it had to be defeating a team that set the NBA record for wins and losses. What did you win, Tim? 73 games? What did you win, 73?
73.
They won 73 games, walked to the NBA Finals. They were, no one had an answer for that style of play. You were years ahead. I had to agree with Bob Myers in that respect. Oh, no, the owner said that. We're years ahead of everybody. Yeah, you were, but in the NBA and Major League Baseball and football, all it takes is one season to catch you. And I thought that to beat a team that had won 73 games, and then when LeBron blocked the shot, I thought those two instances. But let's go back one more. When Kyrie Irving shoots a step back three when all we needed was two to tie. I mean, that was incredible. And I thought Curry played him well. I honestly do. He played him well. It was just a great shot from Kyrie Irving's favorite three-point position on the floor. I just thought those things. What great moment, Timbs. I heard both you, Timbs. I heard the ratings were just unbelievable. It was just unbelievable. Everybody was watching those series.
That's awesome. That's what it's all about, the moments. Well, Tim Roy, this has been a great moment to have you on the show. Let's hope it's the first of several appearances. Great conversation. I know we're anxious to get back. You are as well. So hopefully maybe we'll see each other virtually soon.
I'll see you on my computer. Hey, I got a question for you guys. Have you guys, either one of you, had a chance to look at Terry Pluto's new book on the Richfield Cavaliers?
Yes. Great book.
Is it? I want to get that. Want to get that. Okay.
Yeah, you got to get it.
You sold me now.
For appearing on Cavs HQ, Tim Roy will receive a copy.
Terry Pluto's.
We'll get that to you, Tim. We'll get it to you.
We'll get it to you. We'll get it from Terry.
A lovely party gift.
There you go. Hey, Tim, we really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, guys. Take care.
Tim Roy joining us on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. What a fun show. We'll wrap it all up right after this. Welcome back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Man, that was a fantastic show. Huge thank you goes out to both Cavs legend Lenny Wilkins, along with the voice of the Golden State Warriors, Tim Roy, for stopping by and paying us a visit. Now, I want to tell you about something real cool. Our Legends Cleveland chapter, partnering with Northeast Ohio Neighborhood Network, Molina Healthcare, Hope Foundation, CareSource, and Paramount, will distribute 400 turkeys to deserving City of Cleveland residents. It will start Friday, November 20th. You can register at 216-231-7700, extension 1044. Again, 216-231-7700, extension 1044. Jim, I know you're involved with this. This is really cool.
Yeah, it is. It is, because what you've got is you've got a bunch of young, I consider them young because I'm one of the oldest legends, gentlemen who have all retired from either the NBA, the ABA, Globetrotters, or played overseas, or the G League. They formed this chapter, and the chapter got its start from Manny Leakes. He petitioned the NBA, and they were able to bring it here, but the big facilitator of it all was Campy Russell. Campy Russell, of course, is the Cavs in-house director of programs and stuff for the Legends, and we really appreciate his input. But Tim, this gives us a chance of what we call community engagement. Give some turkeys out. You know, these are really rough times. This will force people to stay home and make their own food, which I think is really paramount in the conditions that we now live under. Hey, and thank you. And thank you for the promo. We appreciate it.
Oh, no doubt. Again, it starts Friday, November 20th, and all that's required, an address, a name, and a phone number, 216-231-7700, extension 1044. Jim, this was a blast. Lenny and Tim Roy, how about that? That was a fun
big
show.
Big time, babe.
All right, man. We'll talk to you again next week. All right, Jimmy, thanks to you. Thanks to the guys over on the other side of the glass, Leo Simone, Kurt McLaughlin, and Marty Allen. Biggest thanks goes to you, the listeners. Indeed, we'll talk to you next week on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Until then, so long, everybody.